When this crucial teaching of Jesus that was removed from our traditional Gospels portrays the above like the below, it is making reference to the lower three earthly kingdoms with the upper three heavenly kingdoms. When the above teaching states, when you make the male and the female one and the same, it is making reference to the male/female outer columns of the tree of duality being brought into the center column of the tree of life. The inside and the outside is, of course, when you are able to bring the reflective images of the outer world with the reality of the inner. And when you can bring the whole shebang into the center, only then can you achieve wholeness, experiencing the next stage of birth and becoming a child of the kingdom. Now, if the above is complex, the next part must be considered ultra complex, because time is a dimension of mind and consciousness, and all the failed images portrayed in Gospel of Thomas saying 84, see beginning at man as an embryonic soul image, wherein the soul-mind matrix, each of the failed images continue to exist as nerve endings or dendrites that connect the upper three kingdoms with the soul with the lower three kingdoms, thereby creating a type of permanent connection between the upper mind of the soul with the lower mind. And this is one of the higher soul realities that Paul warned would be rejected as foolishness by Christians of the simple faith, as well as all of organic men. If you entered what I call the realm of souls, you would encounter each person in their true form as a being of light. What is the source of this divine light? Each soul is the embodiment of the light that it has developed over the course of all the lives that soul has lived from the Alpha of creation to the present. Most souls have made very little progress. They are followers of the various groups they are attached to, and when observed in the realm of souls, they exist as weak, flickering, distant stars. The more advanced the soul, the greater the depth and intensity of the light of that soul. Political, cultural, philosophical, and religious leaders are what can be portrayed as advanced souls, and they re-enter from life to life with other souls who are part of their entourage of souls who are karmically attached to each other and to the group their soul has incarnated with. While all groups enter to grow and develop, other groups are subject to what can be portrayed as negative karma because of that soul group's past actions where they violated the freedom and rights of others. Many of these groups dwell in what Jesus portrays the prison. See, the leaders today are the same leaders written about in the history books. All the despots of the past are on the world stage at present, continuing their struggles with their adversaries. Often, the sides have been switched, with past victims becoming aggressors, while aggressors in the past recast in the role of victims. Many of the mainstream Reform and conservative Jews were angered when Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, the former chief rabbi of Israel, a religious scholar who was also the spiritual leader of the Shas party, made the statement that no innocent Jews died in the Holocaust. What Rabbi Yosef said was that the 6 million Holocaust victims were reincarnations of the souls of sinners, people who transgressed and did all sorts of things that should not be done. Rabbi Yosef explained that these souls who had previously lived lives of sin had been reincarnated in order to atone. Immediately, all sectors of the population, from then Prime Minister Barrett to the Holocaust survivors, condemned the rabbi's remarks. In a communique issued from his office, Barrett stated, "His words are liable to harm the memory of those who perished in the Holocaust and are liable to hurt the feelings of their families and the feelings of the entire nation." Legislator Yosef Tommy Lapid, who had been himself a Holocaust survivor who at that time headed the secularist Shinui Party, condemned Rabbi Yosef's statements and said he was in effect confirming what Hitler said, that the Jews are sinners. Holocaust organizations and the two main Israeli radio stations reported that they were inundated with phone calls and fax messages, most of them criticizing Yosef's statement. The Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial Museum labeled Yosef's remarks miserable and said they seriously harm the memory of the victims. In a released statement, the museum said, "With all due respect to such a leader, it's hard to understand where Rabbi Yosef gets the courage to explain the intentions and ways of the supreme authority." Attempting to clarify his words in the following week to a populace that did not comprehend one of the most paramount teachings of both the Old and New Testaments of the Bible, Rabbi Yosef cited a 16th century Jewish mystic, Isaac Luria, who wrote, "If the soul was not purifying entirely the first time, and it left this world, that soul must come back in a reincarnation, even a few times, until it is entirely purifying. What Rabbi Yosef stated was that all those Jews who died at the hands of Hitler were merely reaping their own debts they had themselves committed in a previous life. See the laws that control our lives. And while the secular Jewish leaders were offended by his statement, Rabbi Yosef did not state that they were Jews when they committed the sins that invoked the laws of cause and effect upon them. From the perspective of the laws that pseudo-authorities are in denial of, the scriptures state, "Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows." Gal 6:7 NIV. And this could just as well be expressed in the words, "The chickens of those people who suffered under Hitler had come home to roost, and in that life they inherited the fruit of their own past actions." What the rabbi suggested was that, even though we may appear to be the innocent victim in this present life, this was not always the case, and each of us inherits both the good and the evil that we have personally and collectively engendered in the previous existences our soul has lived prior to our being born into the present life we are now living, as so clearly stated in the words of the Church Father Origen when he wrote, "Every soul comes into this world strengthened by the victories or weakened by the defeats of its previous life." Origen, De Principis. Thus, the common message proclaimed was the confirmation of the great biblically defined truth that what goes around comes around. Even as I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. Job 4:8 NKJ. Therefore they shall eat the fruit of their own way, and be filled to the full with their own fancies. Prov 131 NKJ. But you have planted wickedness, you have reaped evil, you have eaten the fruit of deception. Hosea 10:13 NIV. God will give to each person according to what he has done. Rom 2:6 NIV. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. The one who sows to please his sinful nature, from that nature will reap destruction. The one who sows to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Gal 6:7 8 NIV. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Rev 13:9 10 NKJ. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made man. Gen 9:6 NIV. His disciples asked him, "Jesus, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jn 9:2 NIV. Yet, because certain New Testament teachings were removed by the pagan Church of Rome, modern Christians are at a total loss when they attempt to explain how the laws work in the life of man, and even the very reason why bad things seemingly happen to good people, or why a benevolent God ordains the good and evil that man is incapable of understanding. See the laws that control our lives. The light of spiritually advanced souls. In spirit, those who can be portrayed as a spiritually advanced soul would appear as a great, overpowering, and deep light. And this soul reality should provoke a number of important questions. What is the source of this great light? Why are the vast majority of souls undeveloped and are perceived as weak, flickering lights? While more advanced souls as more intense lights with greater depth, while what can be portrayed as a spiritually advanced soul would be perceived as great lights? In fact, only in this world of commonality can an undeveloped soul, a more advanced soul, and a great spiritually advanced soul appear to be on the same level of equality. Thus, the question must be asked, what is the source of the light of the soul? And because few people possess the light of higher understanding, this also is one of the major flaws in the thinking of those people, both East and West, who imagine that the body is a mere vessel they are inhabiting that will be cast away when they have completed their present lives. From an Eastern perspective, where it is taught that the soul jumps from body to body in each succeeding life until the wheel of reincarnation is broken, I have heard the statement that the body is like an automobile, and in the same way that one gets rid of an old car, the soul discards an old body and acquires a new one as a vehicle while in this world. We have all heard the rhetoric, "I am a spiritual being, living a physical life," but this concept embraced by many is simply not exactly true. By being created in the image of God, each soul has been imbued with what can be said to be a vertical slice of creation. Added at the body that you are presently inhabiting is a vertical slice of the lower nature of your own higher soul self that you have entered into the physical to refine and transform. In the same way that each higher soul self inherits a vertical slice of creation, you, as a soul-generated personality, inherit a vertical slice of your higher soul self, as explored in the subheading, The Folly of Original Sin, where the wisdom of Solomon is quoted as stating, Now I was a child good by nature, and being good, I came into a body undefiled. Each person's ability to learn, advance, and comprehend man's higher reality is all dependent upon the condition of the lower three kingdoms of that soul which the soul-generated personality inherited when entering into a life. Again quoting the Church Father Origen from the previous link on original sin, For God the Creator makes a certain vessel unto honor, and other vessels to dishonor. But that vessel which has cleansed itself from all impurity, an untarnished wedding garment, he makes a vessel unto honor, while that which has stained itself with the filth of vice he makes a vessel unto dishonor. The conclusion from which, accordingly, is this, that the cause of each one's actions is a pre-existing one, and then everyone, according to his deserts, is made by God either a vessel unto honor or dishonor. Therefore, every individual vessel has furnished to its Creator out of itself the causes and occasions of its being formed by Him to be either a vessel unto honor or one unto dishonor. And if the assertion appear correct, as it certainly is, and in harmony with all piety, that it is due to previous causes that every vessel be prepared by God either to honor or to dishonor, it does not appear absurd that, in discussing remoter causes in the same order and in the same method, we should come to the same conclusion respecting the nature of souls, and believe that this was the reason why Jacob was beloved before he was born into this world, and Esau hated, while he still was contained in the womb of his mother. When Origen makes reference to the reality that each person, according to his deserts, is made by God either a vessel unto honor or dishonor, therefore, every individual vessel has furnished to its Creator out of itself the causes and occasions of its being formed by Him to be either a vessel unto honor or one unto dishonor. What is being presented is the laws of creation that orchestrate each one of the lives a soul lives based upon the accomplishments of that soul. See the laws that control our lives. And because the laws of creation are imbued with the power to evolve each and every soul from the alpha of ignorance to the omega of enlightened light, presenting to each soul a labyrinth of choices that test and open the opportunity of advancement, what the Church Father Origen portrays is a great truth that is not at all understood in modern times. What Origen is stating is that when a soul-generated personality enters this life and inherits a physical body that has been put through the process of refinement with the animal nature evolved, domesticated and made a faithful servant to that soul's higher spiritual nature, that soul personality as a vessel of honor, is able to make great gains based upon the opportunities and choices that soul-generated personality makes. When Paul speaks of organic, natural man's inability to comprehend man's higher soul reality because he is of an animal soul level of consciousness, see organic man ruled over by his lower animal nature, it is because the vertical slice of that soul's lower animal nature which the soul-generated personality inherited was never refined and evolved a reality that Origen portrays as a vessel of dishonor. And this is why organic man in the Gospel of the Nazarenes is portrayed as beasts who walk in the form of man. Further, this is why Paul wrote of the necessity to beat my body and make it my slave. 1 Cor 9:27 NIV, and why Christians are commanded to put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, call 3:5 NIV, with the warning, For if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live. Rom 8:13 KJV. When Gospel of Thomas saying 22 states the requirement to make the below and the above one and the same, it is because the lower three earthly spiritual centers serve as a reflective foundation for the upper three heavenly spiritual centers, and all seven centers must be in balanced wholeness. In order to manifest the white light that forms from the segments of the rainbow that is, Genesis 9:13 reads, I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When Jesus taught the multitudes of people in parables, that is, and with many such parables he spoke the word to them as they were able to hear it. But without a parable he did not speak to them. And when they were alone, he explained all things to his disciples. Mark 4:33-34 NKJV. Those people among the multitudes who had entered that life with a refined and evolved lower nature were able to understand with greater clarity and comprehension the spiritual meaning of the parable. While the multitudes only heard parabolic accounts, those more evolved souls who entered life as a vessel of honor perceived and comprehended what the vast majority of the multitudes of people could not, which reality of carnal imposed deafness, blindness, and barrier to higher understanding prompted the Wycliffe Bible Commentary to write that the initiate was instructed in the esoteric teaching, which was not revealed. To outsiders, the mystery of the kingdom and its ultimate development is the full-orbed message of the gospel. Rom 16:25-26. The purpose of parables was to instruct the initiates without revealing the items of instruction to the ones who were without. This is in keeping with the biblical principle that spiritual understanding is restricted to those who have become spiritual, with the far-reaching implications embodied in the reality that spiritual understanding is restricted to those who have become spiritual. And while this is true, what must be examined is the meaning of the term initiate as one who has evolved to the level where they can be portrayed as INTHE house, where the multitudes are portrayed as being without, see in the house. What Jesus stated was of such a profound importance to comprehend if the seeker/disciple was to begin to understand the true meaning of the scriptures as set forth in the parable of the sower and the seed, that Jesus then warned, "And he saith unto them, Know ye not this parable? And how shall ye know all the parables?" Mark 4:13 ASV. And what this means is that if you fail to understand the meaning of the parable of the sower and the seed, and put its teachings into practice in your daily lives, that it will be impossible for you to understand any part of the spiritual meaning of the gospel teachings. And if you fail to understand the meaning of the term in the house, and the difference in the reality of those who Jesus portrayed in the words, "But unto them that are without, all things are done in parables, that seeing they may see, and not perceive, and hearing they may hear, and not understand," that you will dwell in what Jesus portrayed as the outer darkness of mind and being, see outer darkness, walking upon what Jesus portrayed as the broad way of self-destruction, Matt 7:13-14. To become what is conveyed in the parable of the sower and the seed as the good ground, it is absolutely necessary to live in strict accord with the gospel teachings, which transformation of self into the good ground refines and evolves the lower nature within which the seed of the soul has been planted at conception, and creates within self the necessary environment for the Logos to indwell, that is. Jesus replied, "If anyone loves me, he will obey my teaching. My Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. He who does not love me will not obey my teaching. These words you hear are not my own. They belong to the Father who sent me." John 14:23-24 NIV. But this becomes impossible for those who believe in accord with the dogma and traditions of men, and live a lifestyle in accord with the ways of this world. The word initiate, as used by the Wycliffe Bible Commentary, should be understood as a person who has inherited a refined and evolved lower nature by virtue of the previous accomplishments of their higher soul self. And this is why Jesus could talk to the multitudes, and only the more advanced souls would understand the spiritual meaning. This is also true with respect to the allegorical meaning of the scriptures, see an inconvenient truth, wherein the perception and comprehension of each reader is in relation to not only their own ability to comprehend, but even their ability to understand why the scriptures are composed in the allegorical language of the soul, is contingent upon the refinement and evolution of the lower nature they inherited when soul generated into any given life. The authors of the scriptures understood this reality of mankind and human nature, and they therefore composed the whole of their sacred writings in allegory and parables within a parable. The authors of the scriptures were mystics who were hunted down as heretics, and they understood the need to employ the body of faith-based believers as a type of mule who would perform the important function of preserving the essential, esoteric, body of knowledge that was concealed and hidden within the body of the written text of the parabolic writings. In view of the fact that the authors of the scriptures all understood that their more advanced souls would return in the future, in many instances the body of concealed knowledge that was transported by the faith-based mules enabled them to restore and regenerate themselves in soul-generated future lives. After regeneration and rebirth, they would then be in a position to assist and guide the faith-based believers into a greater understanding of the scriptures and a more spiritual comprehension of man's true reality. Is the mind of an infant empty? Or does the infant possess the innate ability to tap into a pre-existing source of knowledge within himself that exceeds all of the wisdom of this world that he could be taught in the traditional manner? Modern academia, our culture, and mainstream religions all base their teachings upon the empty mind philosophy, which is in total opposition to the scriptures and the wisdom of the wise and enlightened ancients. And when rightly understood, modern faith-based believers fail to understand the very foundation of the scriptures they promote because they fail to understand even the nature and purpose of the Gospels. The scriptures are based upon the process of anamnesis, or drawing from a pre-existing source within the child/person's own mind. Under the heading of anamnesis, philosophy, the Wikipedia states, "It is the idea that humans possess knowledge from past incarnations and that learning consists of rediscovering that knowledge within us." The article then goes on to say, Socrates' response is to develop his theory of anamnesis. He suggests that the soul is immortal and repeatedly incarnated. Knowledge is actually in the soul from eternity. What one perceives to be learning, then, is actually the recovery of what one has forgotten. Once it has been brought back, it is true belief, to be turned into genuine knowledge by understanding. And thus Socrates and Plato sees himself, not as a teacher, but as a midwife, aiding with the birth of knowledge that was already there in the student. And this is why the Apostle Peter is quoted in the writings of his disciple Clement as stating with respect to the scriptures, "Therefore great care is to be taken, that when the law of God is read, it be not read according to the understanding of our own mind. For there are many sayings in the divine scriptures which can be drawn to that sense which everyone has preconceived for himself. And this ought not to be done. For you ought not to seek a foreign and extraneous sense, which you have brought from without. Why should the scriptures not be read and understood in accord with an extraneous sense, which you have brought from without? Because the whole of the scriptures are an allegorical presentation using and employing catalysts that connect the outer physical consciousness with the pre-existing inner soul and spiritual consciousness, which when rightly understood, is the very essence of the process of anamnesis. Therefore, when you attempt to teach the meaning of the scriptures, you negate the catalysts and symbols that are contained in the scriptural body, and you inhibit and atrophy the development of those areas of mind that must be developed in order to tap into this inner source of knowledge. Further, this is why Jesus commanded his disciples that they can only have any teacher the true prophet or logos that dwells within them at the very core of their consciousness. See true prophet. With respect to this one teacher that the followers of Jesus were commanded to seek out exclusively, Peter taught that he is within the mind of every one of us. But in those who have no desire of the knowledge of God and his righteousness, he is an operative, but he works in those who seek after that which is profitable to their souls, and kindles in them the light of knowledge. Wherefore seek him first of all, and if you do not find him, expect not that you shall learn anything from any other. In their abandonment of the gospel first principles and the one source of the truth of all truths that is drawn out through the process of anamnesis, the modern Christian world has virtually nothing in common with the purpose and objective of the original gospel teachings. But what this also means is that the more we learn in the traditional manner as embraced by academia, the more we suppress those innate resources of mind that have the ability to tap into this inner source of ultimate truth. See academia and the feminist cultural war on women. And with respect to the true meaning of the scriptures, the more we study commentaries, attend Bible study groups, and the teachings of traditional religious institutions and authorities, the more we alienate ourselves from the true and spiritual meaning of the Gospels. Mankind is portrayed in the parable of the two sons as the younger son who abandons the kingdom of the father and squanders away his divine inheritance on riotous living in this realm which is called the Far Country, also portrayed as the outer darkness of mind and being. See outer darkness, which, when rightly understood, parallels the analogy of Plato's Cave of Illusions. See cave. In the Gospel of Thomas, this world is portrayed in the rather profound statement. Jesus said, "He who has come to understand this world shall discover, only, a corpse, and whoever has discovered a corpse shall transcend beyond this world," which implies the reality that the only means by which mankind can be restored to his original condition is to transcend and move beyond the limitations of this world, that is, the far country that is not his place of origin. And this was and remains the only objective of the authors of the scriptures in the composition of their sacred writings. In the 4th century, the Church of Constantine took the most corrupted copies of the scriptures and further edited them to make them reflect the Mithraic beliefs of pagan Rome. What they did was inhibit the Christian world from using the scriptures for their intended purpose as the key of knowledge, removing the most important spiritual teachings and concepts and reframing them as mere historical accounts. And in this respect, the Church Father Origen portrayed the historical facade of the literal text as virtually worthless, that is, scripture contains an unhistorical element inwoven with the history, in order that the worthlessness of the latter may drive us to seek the spiritual meaning. Origen quoted under Origen Adamdius, the Encyclopedia of Religion and Ethics. In the same way that the Gospel of Thomas portrays the wisdom and knowledge of this world as a corpse, Origen correctly portrays what we teach in academia, our churches, and our cultural wisdom as worthless, shadow faux knowledge. Why? Because whatever is genuine in this world connects the outer with the inner, the below with the above, that is, Jesus said to them, "When you make the two one, and when you make the inside like the outside, and the outside like the inside, and the above like the below, and when you make the male and the female one and the same, so that the male not be male nor the female female, then will you enter the kingdom," Gospel of Thomas. The objective of the scriptures was to connect the prodigal sons and daughters who are lost in this, the far country of the outer darkness of mind and being, with their inner source. Using the process of anamnesis and the symbols of the scriptures as catalysts to connect the inside with the outside and the above with the below, thereby making the male and the female one and the same, enabling the prodigal sons and daughters to be restored to the kingdom. But the rewriting and corruption of the scriptures and the church's attempt to only support the historical facade has inhibited the faith-based believers from fulfilling the original objectives and purpose of the Gospels. To their own detriment, the leaders of the modern church ignore the warning of the Apostle, "Let no man beguile you in any wise, for it will not be, except the falling away come first, and the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, he that opposeth and exalteth himself against all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sitteth in the temple of God, setting himself forth as God." 2 Thessalonians 2:3-4 ASV. What the Apostle is herein very clearly predicting is that there would come a time when the God of the Christian Church will be a false God. Historically speaking, it has been almost universally recognized that the period in time that the Apostle could have been referring to was in the 4th century, when the Church made a covenant with the Roman Emperor Constantine. With regard to this falling away, the Adam Clark commentary writes of this passage of Paul's epistle, "Except there come a falling away first, we have the original word apostasia in our word apostasy, and by this term we understand a dereliction of the essential principles of religious truth, either a total abandonment of Christianity itself, or such a corruption of its doctrines as renders the whole system completely inefficient to salvation." But what this apostasy means is a question which has not yet, and perhaps never will be, answered to general satisfaction from the Adam Clark commentary. Not to depreciate or make less the significance of any one of the individual statements presented in the above words, what the modern believer must recognize is the far-reaching totality of the statement. But what this apostasy means is a question which has not yet, and perhaps never will be, answered to general satisfaction. Ultimately, what this means to the modern believer is that each and every church authority from the 4th century to the present, as well as every single preacher of the gospel, speaks from the position of concession, which concession is that there is a great void in their knowledge of the truth. Thus, one of the core presumptions upon which our present-day doctrine of faith is based is that these words of the Apostle Paul are not true. One of the major causes of the present state of doctrinal chaos is the failure of modern pastors and church authorities to recognize that the key to their dilemma is found in the prediction of the apostle that there would come a time of total abandonment of the gospel with respect to the desolation of all genuine spiritual Christian ideas and concepts. The purpose of the Gospels was to restore the prodigal sons to the Edenic kingdom of origination, which is their true source. The objective of the God of this world, which in the parable is portrayed as the citizen of the far country, is to keep the prodigal sons shackled to the things of this world, which meant that the most important spiritual teachings in the Gospels had to be removed, while the scriptures themselves rewritten to support only the historical facade of the written word, which Paul portrayed as the letter that killeth, and Jewish folktales, see 2 Cor 3, 6, Titus 1:14. The first of the scriptures to get a rewrite and pagan makeover was the book of Acts. When the further corruption of the scriptures was seen by both the Ebionite Nazarenes and the spiritual, Gnostic, Christians, they buried 7 caches of scriptures in accord with the numbers and places in the already edited book of Acts that would enable these more pure copies of scriptures to be recovered in the future. And because of the advent of a coming spiritual rebirth, this is why both the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Nag Hammadi Library of Scriptures was discovered in the 1945-47 timeframe. And the importance of these scriptures is explored in my introduction to the Gospel of Thomas, see. Because the more spiritually advanced souls were born into physical bodies where the lower animal nature was more refined and evolved, these more advanced souls could read these more pure scriptures and begin to perceive the deeper spiritual meaning that lied concealed beneath the facade of the written text. Thus, in the same way that it was written of Jesus that, and with many such parables he spoke the word to them as they were able to hear it, but without a parable he did not speak to them. And when they were alone, he explained all things to his disciples. Mark 4:33-34 NKJV, those whose lower animal nature was more refined and evolved were able to comprehend the higher spiritual meaning of the parable. And in much the same way, the many healings and miracles in the written text of the scriptures possess a deeper spiritual meaning that could only be seen and comprehended by those with the spiritual eyes and understanding to perceive the deeper spiritual meaning that was lying concealed beneath the facade of the written text that Paul portrayed as the letter that killeth and Jewish folktales, see 2 Cor 3, 6. Titus 1:14.